B-Pod Studios.
The best show ever on 97.5 The Fanatic.
97.5 The Fanatic, NBC Sports Philadelphia. Very, very excited to talk to this gentleman. First time on this program, the Hall of Famer, writes for The Athletic, Mr. Jason Stark, and he's brought to us by Everfresh Juices and Juice Drinks, Everfresh Nature's Refreshment. How are you today, Jason?
Hey, Tyrone. Great to be part of the best show ever. Nah. You know, I've been part of a lot of shows. Many of them were definitely not the best show ever, so this is an honor.
No, thank you so much. You know we love having you. The best baseball writer we know in the country. We'll find out one day once we learn a couple other languages if you're the best in the world, but we know you're the best in America. Trade deadline, obviously, yesterday. A lot of moves, a lot of big moves. We have a lot to talk to you about, but I'll start right away with the Phillies and the anticipation already for tomorrow's start with Syndergaard. So I guess it's a two-parter. What did you think about them overall, what they did, and what do you think about Syndergaard going tomorrow as the new, I guess, fifth starter in a way?
Okay, well, overall, I've been calling around today, asking people around baseball, you know, about the deadline, and the Phillies get really good grades. And I've always thought that you find out at the deadline who the best GMs are, who the best executives in the game are. And we saw why Dave Dombrowski has had the career he's had. He rides the wave, Tyrone. He stays patient. He stays calm. He knows what he wants. He knows who he wants. He knows who he can give up. He knows what the right time is to say yes. And we've all seen GMs here and everywhere who get swallowed up by that wave. That's not this guy. He just keeps building the roster one move at a time, and it's impressive. And I thought what he did yesterday was impressive. Now, on Syndergaard, like the whole process was really interesting because they preferred not to trade for a rental. But for every starter who had any amount of control, they were asked for Painter or Abel or both or those two and more, and Dave was not going to do that. And then with the next group of starters, it was pretty clear Dave targeted Syndergaard early on. I heard that from everybody. But the Angels, it sounds like they also asked for Painter, and they didn't want to come down. They didn't call back until there were 15 minutes left before the deadline. And so when the price became Mickey Moniak, that was a price they were willing to pay.
Hey, Jason, it's Hunter Brady. Excited to talk some baseball with you. Seems like they believe in Brandon Marsh as a center field option, not just for this year, but for down the road as well. What are your thoughts on his game, and do you believe that his offense can be turned around?
Hunter, that's a great question. You know, this was interesting, too. I didn't realize at first what a big priority center field was for them at this deadline. They were in on a ton of guys. I heard Dalton Varsho's name in Arizona. I heard Jose Siri's name in Houston. He went to Tampa Bay. I heard the kid in Colorado, Daza. But Brandon Marsh was the guy they liked the most, that they targeted, and he's a really intriguing player. 2 years ago, you know, he was a top 40 prospect in the whole sport. And maybe you guys can remember a Phillies outfielder and especially a Phillies center field prospect who was regarded that highly. I can't. Brandon Marsh is a fantastic defensive center fielder. And the people I've talked to who know him say he has big offensive upside, like multi-all-star team upside. The deal with the Angels was that they tinkered with his swing like 1,000 times until he didn't even know what his swing was anymore. And you're seeing that. It's shown up in the massive swing and miss. But Dave Dombrowski said something interesting yesterday. He said they're very confident that they can fix that, that they can unlock this hit tool that he showed early in his career. And you just alluded to this. He's got 5 years of control left after this year. So this has a chance to be a really important piece of their puzzle when you think about the way they've thrashed around these last few years with center fielders who weren't really even center fielders.
Jason, let's talk a little bit about Juan Soto and the Padres. I mean, the reason why I say that is when you think back to Manny Machado going over there, and this team just spends money like it's going out of style lately. your thoughts on what they've done.
Yeah, that was quite the deal. First off, Ricky, I want you to try to comprehend how the earth is spun. Like, I used to be the one interviewing you. Now you're the one interviewing me.
Complete. Yeah, but you're in the Hall of Fame. I'm not.
Yeah, I don't like.
I'm trying to get there this way now.
Okay. Well, I'll do my best to live up to your faith.
There you go.
The Padres are incredible because they play right up the road from the Dodgers. They're not going to catch the Dodgers. If you look at the wild card standings, I think they're five in the loss column behind the Braves. I guess it's four now. They're probably not going to catch them. Means they have to play a best of three first round series on the road, all in Atlanta. So, you know, most GMs would look at those odds and say, we're not doing that. We're not giving up our five best prospects for that. But they're trying to build something special. I've talked to Peter Seidler, their owner, and his big thing is, we are not a small market, despite their market size. And that's the way they're acting. I mean, look, they gave up a lot, man. Those five kids they gave up, all profile as future all-stars. It's probably the biggest trade haul ever in the history of the deadline. But Juan Soto's a player unlike anyone who's ever been traded at the deadline. So if you line up him next to Tatis, who's 22, with Manny, who just turned 30 this year, right? These are guys you have together now this year, next year, the year after that. They're going to be a force. If they ever do get to October, they could beat anybody.
Absolutely. Now, Jason, it's scary. Obviously, people should be always reading your columns on The Athletic. I recommend it. I'm a subscriber for a reason, and I want people to read it. But there's a couple numbers in your Soto, since Ricky brought it up, column that blew me away. Here's one of them. Now, Chipper Jones, we all know Chipper Jones around here. He killed us for years. Hall of Fame level player, right? He was 23 when he hit his first home run. Soto, right now at the age of 23, has 119 home runs. Are you kidding me? And then here's the other one. The last time a player on a Hall of Fame track got traded this young was Alomar. They're talking about the trade with Fred McGriff, Joe Carter, and Teddy Fernandez. He was 22. He had 22 home runs. And this guy gets moved. Just how once in a million is the fact that a player of his caliber and his age is getting moved at all?
Yeah, it's honestly never happened. It's certainly never happened at the deadline. If you read that column, Tyrone, you know I went through all future Hall of Fame players. I went through every position player in the live ball era who got off to a start even close to Juan Soto's to see, all right, when did they change teams? And the only player on the whole list who even changed teams before age 28 was Miguel Cabrera, who was 2 years older. And Mickey got traded for Andrew Miller and Cameron Maybin, who were both still playing in the big leagues last year. So they played for 15 years. And yet, that's regarded as so light compared to what the Padres just gave up for Soto. But he's on a Hall of Fame track. Like, if you look at the players he's most comparable to at his age, the list starts with Ted Williams. And it's hard to comprehend that, right? He and Ted Williams are the only two players in history who at this age have either homered or walked in almost a quarter of their plate appearances. Try to digest that. He's 23. There are 20 players in the futures game older than him. Crazy.
Yeah, it's absolutely ridiculous, and I'm just glad that I don't have to see it with the Nationals anymore. But shifting gears a little bit back to the Phillies, what's your biggest takeaway after watching Alec Bohm's July?
You know, Alec Bohm came here with reputation as a guy with a feel for hitting, and then he just lost his way. And, you know, Kevin Long's really good. He's as good as any pitching or hitting coach in the game, and I think he's helped Alec Bohm get back to just being himself. I'm not trying to force power, not trying to force pulling the ball. Just be who he is and let the rest of it come. Like Ricky can speak to this, when you take players and try to force them into being something they're not, that's when you have issues. And, you know, it's interesting that you asked me about him, Hunter, because I was talking to a guy from one team today, and he brought up Alec Bohm as a comparable to Brandon Marsh, as a guy whose swing got messed with early on, lost his way, and then found it. Brandon Marsh got to the big leagues very similar time, very similar amount of experience. And if they can do with him what they've done with Alec Bohm, think of what he could be.
Well, what are your thoughts on what, I mean, obviously Nick Castellanos has struggled at times this year. He's kind of breaking out of it a little bit here with a big home run this afternoon. But, you know, what are your thoughts on Nick Castellanos coming over to Philadelphia? And what do you expect of him the rest of the year?
Well, I mean, Tyrone and I have talked about this like every week. They need him to be the guy they signed for $100 million. We've seen some signs of it on this trip. 11 for 25 on this trip, only struck out four times. He said after the game that he's trying not to do too much. You watched him, man. He has been trying to do way too much. You're not going to fix yourself if you swing at every pitch thrown, or you make up your mind before a pitch is thrown, you're going to swing. His plan was so bad. It was so off. One of the things that was encouraging today was hitting the ball over the center field fence, not trying to do that. And, Ricky, I'm sure you remember this. Early in the year, he hit some balls really hard to center field. The weather was cold.
They died at the warning track. Yeah.
Messing with the baseball, and those balls kept dying. And he got freaked by that more than probably anybody on that club. And I think he overreacted to that, got off to a terrible start, put way too much pressure on himself, decided he was just going to swing his way out of it. If he just dials it back and lets the game come to him, again, think of what he could be these last 2 months if you get the guy who was doing this in Cincinnati last year.
And last thing, Jason, before I let you go, Vin Scully, all-time great legend. I'm just going to step aside and allow you to speak on a guy who maybe one of the few guys that may even eclipse you as far as baseball greatness.
Well, I belong in the same sentence as Vin Scully, man, but thank you. Vince is the voice of baseball, isn't he? He's the soundtrack of our lives. I can think of so many signature moments in baseball, and we all can in our lives. It doesn't even matter how old you are, where you can hear Vin Scully calling them in your head. So it's going to be so strange for me to live in a world with no Vin. A few years ago, when I was still at ESPN, I did an oral history of Vin's career. You can find it pretty easily if you search for it. It's one of my favorite pieces I ever worked on. I spent weeks talking to 27 different people about Vin Scully, and it was so much fun to hear all the stories one after another. I mean, just for hours on end. And, you know, there's somebody that you guys know who I talked to for that piece. His name is Bryce Harper. And let me tell you why. This is really cool. You remember in Vin's last season, all the players who would take the elevator upstairs and go visit Vin in the booth?
Yes.
Bryce and I are pretty sure he was the first player ever to do that. The Nationals went in there really early that season. Bryce grew up in Vegas listening to Vin. So he got to L.A. and he asked the Dodgers, can I go upstairs and see Vin and just tell him how much he's meant to me? And they said, sure. So he goes up there, he posts the photo, and that just started the procession of all the players who did that for the rest of that year. And it tells you a little about Bryce and his feel for baseball history, but it tells you more about Vin Scully and the impact that he's had on all of us for 67 years. And when I say all of us, I'm including players on every team, young and old.
Wow.
Do you have a favorite call?
In a season that has been so improbable, the impossible has happened.
There it is.
Pretty good, huh?
That is very good.
What's yours?
I think the Buckner Error.
You got to do it?
No. I only did. You know me. I only did Harry.
Yeah, right. When I was working on this piece, I talked to Bob Costas. The first time was for over an hour and a half. Then he called me back 2 days later and said, I had some more thoughts. We went another hour. And Costas can do like whole innings of Vin Scully with the perfect cadence out of his head. You know, the Buckner inning, the Kirk Gibson inning, he can do the whole at bat or the whole inning. It's amazing. There's only one Bob Costas too, but we all have those calls in our head. It's so cool.
It is. Absolutely. Well, Jason, thanks so much for the knowledge as usual. And let's see what this new Phillies team looks like the rest of the way.
Sounds good, Tyrone. All the best to the best show ever.
Thank you, Jason. Thanks so much. That was Jason Stark, brought to you by Everfresh Juices and Juice Drinks. Everfresh, nature's refreshment. Man, that guy has a lot of information every
single day.
He's just fantastic.
He's great.
He's in the Hall of Fame for a reason.
BackstageCountry.com, your online home for all things country music. Like most of us, Keith Urban also has a bucket list. You may be surprised to learn what is and is not on his. Text Keith to 45911 to read and learn more about the central theme of Keith's bucket list. Get a link to the story sent right to your phone when you text Keith to 45911. Go inside country music at BackstageCountry.com.